Welcome to the Gridiron Show in association with Sports Travel Tours. We are 2 days away from the first game at Wembley. Jets Dolphins this weekend. We're going to be speaking with players from both teams. We're going to be speaking with Simon Clancy and Liam Blackburn about how they think their teams are going to be getting on. And we'll preview all of the week 4 games. And we'll talk about last night's insane game in Pittsburgh by the Three Rivers. This is the Gridiron Show. Oh my God, I'm so excited, Ollie! Stop it.
Sorry.
Yeah. Stop it. Turn it off.
I like it.
We do every time, I quite like now, every time we finish the intro, we do both rock back to do a little bit of air guitar. This is just a little look into our lives. Maybe one day we'll periscope the show. How do you feel about that?
I don't know what that is.
Okay, it's 7 a.m. on Friday morning right now. The late game on Thursday night literally finished 2 and a bit hours ago. In fact, it would have been only 2 hours ago, thanks to the fact that it went to overtime, but we'll get onto that in a minute. We've got a full slate of games this weekend. Well, though, there are teams on a bye. So how many teams on a bye? Like 6, 7, 8?
2.
Oh, God. So we've got a lot of games to talk about, and quite a few bad games as well, but don't worry, we'll cover all your teams in some form of depth. And then before we get on to all of that, we're going to be talking about this week's weekend's game at Wembley, our first ever divisional matchup, the AFC East. The Miami Dolphins taking on the New York Jets. Cannot wait. Ollie's off to Dolphins training a little bit later today. Liam Blackburn's off to Jets training. We've got some interviews arranged with players. We're going to feed all that into the podcast as well. But we just decided to do this thing first thing in the morning because I don't really know why.
Because we looked at our schedules and they didn't match up. This was the only time that you and I would be in the same vicinity and awake and not having commitments with wives. I don't have that at the same time. So, you know, I think it's great. We're here. It's early. You've made me a wonderful cup of tea. And bloody hell, that was a weird game.
Yeah, an absolutely bizarre game. So let's get on to that. Joe Flacco walking off Heinz Field after taking a sack on 4th and 10, trailing by 3 points with just over 2 minutes remaining Thursday night. How did you think the Baltimore Ravens season was looking at that point?
I was looking 0-4. That's how it was looking, and I was loving it.
And yet somehow the Ravens outlasted their bitter rivals 23-20 in overtime after a ridiculous series of failures by the Steelers. After Flacco's sack, the Steelers unable to convert a first down. Then Josh Scobie missed 2 field goals in the final 2.5 minutes of regulation. He's now 6-10 for the season before Justin Tucker's 52-yard field goal, someone who is clutch when he kicks, in overtime, reminded just how valuable a good kicker can be. The Steelers slipped to 2-2, and they might just be undefeated if they had a better kicker. If you look at the 2 games they've lost, they could have won both of them if it wasn't for Scobie missed field goals. The Steelers should have won this much earlier, though. Joe Flacco had a terrible fumble and an ugly interception. Steve Smith left the game with a back injury and was sorely missed as their offense struggled to move the ball in the second half. The Steelers blitzed almost constantly once Smith went off the field, and their offensive woes looked not to matter, as really they were closing in on the win. Joe Flacco then executes an excellent drive with 1:01 left, 17-yard pass to Waller, a 20-odd yard pass to Aiken, you know, these no-name guys. Then Justin Forsett busts an 8-yard run up the middle to set up that game-tying field goal. Justin Forsett last night had a great game.
He looked great. Were the Steelers that bad that they made him look good?
Yeah, I'm not so sure the Steelers' run defense is very good, but Forsett definitely looked the best he's looked in some time. 27 rushes was a career high, 150 yards is second most in the career, and he came through with 150 yards today. First 3 games, he had 124 yards total. So it was his best game of the season, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, we'll give him that.
So they blow the lead in regulation. Steelers get into good position to win the game twice in overtime. They failed on 2 different 4th down conversions in Ravens territory. That's what happens when you don't trust your kicker with a long field goal.
Yeah, that's fair enough, isn't it? Not trusting their kicker with a long field goal.
Maybe, but you've got 2 4th down conversions, both on shorts. One was a 2-yard, one was a 1-yard. Le'Veon Bell, electric on the day, 150 yards from scrimmage, didn't touch the ball on either 4th down.
That's mad, isn't it? Is that akin to perhaps, I don't know, you're down the final seconds of the Super Bowl?
I don't know what game you could be referring to.
You've got your beast in the backfield and you think, do you know what? We'll throw the ball here.
Try and be cute once. Shame on me. Try and be cute twice, shame on you, or something like that. It nearly worked. Instead, Michael, oh, they put the hands in the ball in the hands of old man Vic, on the night where Vic mostly threw short, safe passes. They called a quarterback sneak on 4th and 2, and then a pass with Antonio Brown pretty much wide open from the Ravens' 33-yard line. That means a 50-yard field goal to, if they snap the ball back. Vic misses him and said after the game, that last pass is going to haunt me for a long time. Baltimore drive down the field, get the winning field goal. They're 1-3, and let's not get overexcited. They're not a good team.
Not a good team.
They're 1-3, and it would take something miraculous for them to take this division to win it. I tweeted out, congratulations to the Cincinnati Bengals, the AFC North champions de facto, and the red rifle under center. I don't know how confident I genuinely feel about that, but if they get a win this weekend and go to 4-0, it's not looking good for the Ravens, certainly. And between the play calling, Tomlin, Todd Haley both have to take some flack. Mike Vick obviously has to take some flack for those game-ending calls. But Kevin Colbert, you know Josh Scobie doesn't look good. You didn't trust him with PATs against the 49ers. You haven't trusted him with field goals in situations where he could have nailed one in two straight games now. He's missed the joint most field goals since the start of 2014.
The other being?
Blair Walsh.
Blair Walsh.
Poor Blair Walsh.
Apparently that's something to do with the old show curse. I do not believe it.
But Nick Novak had an 85% completion, including being 3 of 4 over 50 yards last year. San Diego dropped him because they believed in the rookie Josh Lambeau, thought he had a bigger leg, were concerned about particularly kickoffs. There was a money concern as well. He was still available 3 days ago. He's been snapped up by the Texans now. If when you knew your kicker was bad, Kevin Colbert goes and pick up a different kicker, the Steelers could have already nailed this game before overtime, and even then they might have trusted their kicker in overtime to actually kick a 50-yard field goal at home.
There's a couple of plays that I wanted to talk to you about. The Michael Vick throw into the end zone straight through Antonio Brown's hands. I think that was a bad drop from Brown. I think a receiver of his caliber... Okay, it was low, but it went straight through his hands. He's missed that out.
Yeah, watching it replayed, because we had a bit of a debate about this on Facebook with Matt Sherry as well. My feeling on it is, yes, Antonio Brown, being the quality he is, probably should have caught that. But I believe that Michael Vick, when you've got a receiver as good as Antonio Brown, rather than throwing a very difficult to catch low ball behind him, him having to catch the ball literally on the turn... He's up against Jimmy Smith, who's been terrible this season so far. Got absolutely burned last weekend by Julio Jones. Did they play the... No, by AJ Green? Yeah, they played the Bengals, that's right. I knew it was one of the really great receivers in the league. I would have happily just seen him throw it up and let Antonio Brown contest it. And I'll tell you, it's a touchdown 99 times out of 100.
See, I think if you're Michael Vick, you can't guarantee that. Antonio Brown isn't the biggest receiver, as Matt Sherry said.
But he plays well above his size.
I think if you put it down there, and the fact that it went through his hands, he could have caught that.
Look at the power he threw on Darius Hayward Bay's touchdown.
I love that power. I love that.
It's one of those things. Slow motion replays give us a little bit more. Antonio Brown admittedly should have caught it. There were ways they could have made that play easier
for
him.
Are you PFFing us?
No, I'm not.
You
PFFing,
definitely
trust
are.
Me.
The other play I wanted to talk to you about is Steve Smith Sr. getting pretty much smashed in the face.
Did you not see that?
No, he limped off the field.
I saw him limp off the field, and I saw him get in the face of the cornerback and have a bit of an argument with him, but I didn't really see the play because both of us were working tonight.
Yeah.
I'll watch the game back later on, but we've literally come straight into the studio from work. So.
Well, he was annihilated, basically. Oof. It was pretty to see, but it was quite funny to see on old man Smith.
And what we can say is that Darius Hayward-Bey has now caught a touchdown pass thrown by 3 different number 1 overall picks, Carson Palmer, Andrew Luck, and now Michael Vick, just proving that a good quality quarterback can make a terrible receiver look half decent.
And how good does it... Well, Michael Vick didn't look good, but if you take that in isolation and look at his throwing action, the left-hander...
I love the left-hander.
We don't see it. I think he's got a beautiful throwing action. He's not a beautiful quarterback.
No.
Nor a beautiful man.
Right, let's move on and talk about... Is there any... we normally need to start the shelf with some nonsense. We've launched pretty much straight in with football. Is there anything you'd like to bring up? Anything you'd like to discuss? Or let's just get on and talk some hard football.
Well, very quickly, people get this around the country. Why do people put bollards or, traffic cones in on the road to save a parking space when it's a public parking area?
Because they're assholes.
That it really annoys me. Really, I mean,
there's literally
me.
No other answer to that question. It's because they're terrible human beings.
Terrible human
Did you
beings.
See that fantastic thing in the paper recently about the person who parked in a car park across two spaces in their family parking zone, and one person left a note on their mirror just basically saying, "Mate, come on, not acceptable, what are you thinking, you're a terrible driver," kind of thing. There it is, there's a picture of it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And after the first note, it began to build up over the course of they were in there an hour or so doing their shopping. They had something like 15 notes put on their cars.
That's amazing.
Including people who had put little diagrams of how to drive.
Correct.
Someone who put, "I knew they did disabled parking spaces, but now parking spaces for the blind." "Park in the lines, how incredibly selfish. Where did you learn to drive? Send me their number so I can use them." Some pretty funny stuff.
That's incredible.
So, yeah, that's good. We did manage to get some nonsense in. I hope you're happy with that. Let's talk some football. Wembley! Just to confirm, on Sunday morning, I'm not sure whether or not on Sunday morning I'm going to make it to a pre-game drink.
I'm definitely not, because I'm working until 6 a.m.
Yeah, so it might be difficult with a 2:30 kickoff. If we are, I'll tweet out at Gridiron on Twitter. We didn't do any of our usual pre-show shilling. Get on Gridiron, do your picks, gridiron-magazine.com, and don't forget to check out Sports Travel Tours. Sports tours by sports fans, for sports fans. All worth looking at, checking out. Get on there, go watch a live game in the States. It's well worth doing. And with much more of an experience, not just going to see a game, but meeting ex-players, going to college games, going to high school games, doing tailgating, the whole lot. They build the whole package for you. It is genuinely fantastic. But this game this weekend, we did some talking earlier in the week. We spoke to Greg Jennings and Ryan Fitzpatrick. The teams flew in. They landed literally around about now at Heathrow. In fact, their flights landed something like 40 minutes apart. It was
They could meet each other on the carousel, the baggage carousel.
Oh, if one of it is Heathrow, it does often get delayed. If one of their bags had been delayed, we could see a situation where you've got the Dolphins on one side of the carousel, the Jets on the other.
That's amazing. And randomers in the middle, not knowing why there's so many massive blokes there. Who are these people?
But this afternoon, Ollie and Liam Blackburn of Gridiron Magazine are going to go and be spending some time at training, speaking to some Dolphins players, speaking to some Jets players. So let's kick things off in our preview by having Ollie tell us what happened today at Dolphins training.
Hi, Will. Yeah, I'm here at the Allianz Park, home of Saracens Rugby Club. Training is over. Press conference is over. Player availability is over. It's a beautiful, warm day after walk-through training, a bit of vanilla stuff, of which I saw a practice onside kick. Very exciting. I went out onto the practice field and tried to grab a couple of players. Managed to get a bit with Mike Pouncey of Pouncey Castle's fame. I'm sure he's more famous for something other than that. He said that the offensive line need to protect Ryan Tannehill that little bit more.
How is the Bill Lazor offense going, basically?
I think it's going good. Yeah. You know, our offense is really explosive when we get it going. These first couple weeks have been a struggle for the run game for us, and I think the run game sets up the rest of our offense.
Brilliant. And so last year, it was kind of like a change pattern when you came to London.
Yeah,
so you're hoping for the same this year, I'm guessing. So.
Well, it feels like we're back home again, right? We're just here last year, obviously comfortable with the settings, the surroundings around us. We played really well last year. We're looking to do the same this year.
Brilliant.
How much did the defeat and the manner of defeat against the Bills last week hurt?
Well, it hurt a lot just because it's a division game. Obviously, we didn't play that well. So it's we had to let that game go as fast as possible to move on to the Jets, because it's another really good opponent, and we got to play our best.
Any team bonding going on? You guys have been together with a couple practices.
Well, we're going to all go to the rugby game tomorrow, and we'll check that out. And the whole team will be over there checking the game out.
How was the long flight experience for you?
It was good. Felt like the 8 hours was nothing to us, because when I woke up, we were all there on the ground. So.
And how confident are you guys of keeping Ryan Tannehill standing up?
We will.
Coping with that pretty formidable Jets defense?
We'll do good. Obviously, it's our job on every play to keep him upright. We know when he's upright, he's a special football player, and you know, we're going to take a lot of pride in that this week.
Often we get told there's like a training camp vibe people, the teams come to London. Is that the same here? Do you get a feeling?
Or not really. You know, it's a short trip for us pretty much. We came over, it's Friday already, so we'll be looking forward to a good game.
Good luck, dude.
Thank you, guys. Luck,
cheers. We then moved through into the press conference area, caught the last part of Joe Philbin, lovely fella. It was a press conference, but I managed to get a few questions in to Miami Dolphins head coach, Joe Philbin.
The guys have done a whole, you know, a lot of different things relative to their body, but certainly, you know, this week we've been taking an extra hard look at how we're preparing the team for this game and how they're physically going to feel for this game.
How realistic do you think it is that Brandon Albert will play? Just talk about, you know, the idea that a hamstring injury, weighing, needing him to play versus wanting him to rest.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, we're going to be releasing our injury report any minute. I don't know if we have yet or not. We'll be releasing it today, correct? So we'll have all that information.
What about that challenge of resting a guy versus, you know, your 1-2 and, like, is it going to win?
You always, every week's the same, really, Andrew. I mean, you know, you have to figure out, okay, what players give us the best chance to win, what 46 guys give us the best chance to win, and that should be the criteria. And obviously they have to be medically prepared to do their job, so that's always part of every discussion. But really, it's not any different this week than any other week.
So you're giving players a chance to go and see the site and leave?
Probably hang back at the hotel. I didn't sleep a whole lot on the plane. I'm usually not I get to go to Trafalgar Square tomorrow. It's going to be great, and looking forward to seeing that. But probably not doing a lot.
Joe, the Jets have told us that they brought their own toilet paper with them because they think the British toilet paper is too thin. Have you had any problems with the British toilet paper so far?
Not so far, no. Last time it was great to me. We didn't bring it.
Coach, how concerned are you with the run game, with your rushing? Lamar Miller hasn't really hit his straps yet, and is that something you've been working on over the last week?
Yeah, we want some more consistency in the running game. You know, frankly, we haven't run enough plays. We haven't gotten, like, I talked to the team Wednesday when we began preparation for this game. You know, we got to work for first downs. Let's get first downs. I mean, let's get in normal down and distance situations to see if we can eliminate the penalties, the negative yardage plays that have, you know, hampered our production. So, but absolutely want to see more running game.
Another press conference, sorry guys, but it is quarterback Ryan Tannehill. Now, a lot of other people managed to speak to him about toilet roll. There was some kind of weird prankster from not these shores, not American shores either. But I managed to get some football questions in to Dolphins quarterback Ryan Tannehill.
I don't know about angry, you know, not happy, I wouldn't say. You know, I think there's intensity, there's urgency. And you know, we're not happy about how we play. We understand that we have to play better, but you know, I don't think that you know, throwing things or saying outlandish things is going to change anything. You know, it's a matter of how we handle ourselves day to day, how we prepare. You know, that's what's ultimately going to win this game.
You guys, obviously, I know you say it's one game, but you know what's at stake. I mean, you know how rare it is a 1-3 team to advance to the playoffs.
I mean, I don't know the numbers, but, you know, we have high expectations for ourselves. You know, coming off two tough losses where we didn't perform well, it's a big game for us. You know, there's no other way to say it.
Ryan, what did you learn preparing for this game last year that can help you this year as far as getting sleep or eating right or, you know, hydrating, anything along those lines?
Yeah, I think it's the whole thing, you know, just kind of putting together all the pieces, you know, being able to sleep enough at night, getting to bed, trying to get your body a little bit transitioned over to the British time, making sure you're staying hydrated. It's a long flight, it's easy to get dehydrated and not be properly hydrated. It's a little cooler, so you know, sometimes guys tend not to pay attention to the hydration too much. So I think our team's done a good job of educating us of things to look out for and things to stay on top of.
Coach said you guys are gonna have some free time today after practice to kind of do whatever you want to. What are you gonna do with your spare time?
I don't have anything planned. You know, maybe go grab some dinner somewhere, but you know, nothing crazy planned.
Like,
yeah, stay off my feet.
Can't hit out the pubs.
I think that would be frowned upon.
At some point, something repeated stops being coincidence. Not one of the 11 teams that's lost this game has gone home and produced a winning record at the end of the season. Do you believe in coincidence, or having done this before, is there something about losing on a long road trip like this that deflates the team afterwards?
I don't think so. I wouldn't think so.
So you believe in coincidence?
Yes.
Ryan, Big Ben is 97 meters tall or 103 yards. Do you think you can throw a ball that high?
103 yards? No.
No.
No. How in depth, Ryan, was the inquest into the defeat last week against Buffalo? And also, personally, it was a pretty tough day for you. Have you reflected back on that, or is it looking move on and look forward to today's game?
You know, we look back, you know, Sunday night, Monday, and really took a good look at, an honest look at ourselves. What did we do well? You know, how did I play? What plays were was it my fault that I not perform up to standard, and in what place, you know, could I control? So, obviously, yeah, you take a good look at it, you learn from it, you file it away, and you move on. You can't harbor it and think back upon it, or you're going to be stuck in the same spot.
I spoke to Mike Pouncey just now, and he said that the offensive line need to protect you better. Is that something, obviously you think so as well, but is there something else that you can do to perhaps step up your game when it comes to the Jets defense coming up?
Yeah, of course. You know, I want to play better. I want to, you know, make more plays. You know, I thought the offensive line did a pretty good job. You know, it was a really good front play last week, and they kept me off the ground for most of the day. So, you know, I have to say they did a pretty good job.
Ryan Tannehill, the quarterback of the Miami Dolphins. Of course, everybody knows that. I don't know why I'm explaining it. And then came Jay Ajayi, who has this sort of weird faux Texan-British accent. I asked him about it. It got a bit weird. It's fine. I'm happy with it. I'm not sure he was. But in any case, a lovely day here. The Dolphins seemed really relaxed. They seemed collected. None of them really seemed really... what's the word? Jet-lagged, that's the word. I feel a bit jet-lagged, given the lack of sleep that I've had. Devon Stills, I held his phone and untangled his headphones whilst he did some autographs for a few Dolphins fans, of which I saw Simon from our Fantasy League. Anyway, it's been a great day here. Really looking forward to Sunday. And I've had a little sneaking suspicion for the Miami Dolphins. No, it's going to be the Jets, isn't it? No, it's going to be the Dolphins. No, it's going to be the Jets. It's going to be the Dolphins. I don't know. Back to you, Will. And me. Because I'm there. What's this all about?
Big thanks, Ollie. That was Ollie reporting to us from today's Dolphins training session. And I'm sure he got some great interviews with some great players. But as we've said already, I'm recording this at like 7 a.m. So I don't know the future. I'm sorry. However, a man who I imagine right now, he's our own little footballing oracle, but is more at this moment, less a football analyst and more a concerned Dolphins fan ahead of Sunday's game. Simon Clancy, how are you feeling going into Wembley this weekend?
Mortal, Will. It is
like what Geordie say when they're drunk.
A weird pet.
Read mortal.
Wait, is that Matt Sherry?
God.
We were supposed to be 3-0 at this point, and cantering towards the bye week, but it has. It has fallen very, very flat, very, very quickly.
I mean, it's not like you've had to face the likes of Kirk Cousins and Tyrod Taylor and...
Yeah, because we'd be in real trouble if we had to play those guys. I mean, real trouble.
So going into the game, we know that there have been struggles on the offensive line and the Jets front are decent. And I think my biggest concern with the Dolphins so far has been the Bill Lazor offense, which is kind of predicated on that... same style as Chip Kelly. It's just about, you've got to establish the run to get it going, then get the quick snap, short passes, and they've just had no kind of run game whatsoever, and that's not allowed the offense to get going. Tannehill's not had the protection. What suggests to you in any way that might change this weekend?
Well, there is an inconsistency and a lack of rhythm in the Bill Lazor play calling that has sort of dogged his tenure in Miami, which is very frustrating. And Sunday was kind of the Valhalla for people who think that Lazor is actually remarkably overrated in terms of somebody that just can't quite get it over the line in terms of... I mean, we throw too much. We throw way too much. We never, ever established the run. I mean, it was only really in the second half against the Redskins when... he actually remembered that Lamar Miller even played, And then Miller sort of got back-to-back-to-back carries, picked up some yards. The Redskins, you know, essentially stepped into the box a little bit because Miller was running well, and it allowed Tannehill to complete some passes, and we won the game. But it's Sunday's play calling effort against the Bills was just heinous on a level that I can't even begin to tell you. But you know, it's kind of unfair on Miller, and it's unfair on Jonas Gray that you don't build any consistency in that run game. You know, Miller might get one carry in three possessions. And how do you expect anybody to, you know, not even Adrian Peterson could consistently perform when he's only getting a carry here and a carry there. And Lazor just, you know, puts Ryan back in the shotgun. He gets hammered by, you know, all and sundry because the offensive line is so bad. You know, the performances by the guards, especially Dallas Thomas last week, were just, you know, I mean, Thomas shouldn't be in the league. I mean, it was just a horrendous performance. And, you know, I can't see anything particularly changing this week because, you know, week after week, they say, we need to establish the run, we need to do a better job of establishing the run, but then let's come out and let's throw the ball, you know, 60 times. And I think the biggest kind of underlining of that inconsistency came when we had those essentially eight plays within the, you know, inside the Bills' 2 or 3 yard line. And I think we ended up throwing 6 fades, which is not Tannehill's best throw anyway. I mean, I think all 6 of them landed out of bounds. And then threw the ball on 2 other occasions, one of which was Tannehill throwing it away, and then another, you know, dreadful call and throw. We never ran the ball once, and you just think, just once, just hand it off once.
That's see what happens. You're talking to a 49ers fan who suffered through the Super Bowl 3 years ago and the NFC Championship game 2 years ago. I know about throwing fades on the goal line when you've got Frank Gore in the backfield. So
it's just so frustrating.
It is. I know that we had the whole Blake Bortles calling fans out for talking about play calls, but really, come on, guys.
Mm. There was a sort of 3rd and 2. In the first, I think probably in the first quarter, actually, when we were magically still in the game, that incredible moment where we still belonged in the game. I think we had 14-0 down, but we at least had the ball and were driving. And he called a reverse to Jarvis Landry, who ran a sort of 4.6 40, to the short side of the field. And, it, you know, he lost sort of 4 or 5 yards. And you just think, no, no, it's not. That is not play calling. That is not a good call.
I'm trying to be the positive one here. What I saw from the Jets defense last week in the first half against the Eagles is that if your play calling does go in the right direction, then actually I think they are, there are defense that can be exploited. It was only in the second half when they came out and they sort of realized that, oh, hold on, we've not stacked up in the box because they didn't have a running game for this week. Suddenly they've got a running game going and they're beating us. Let's, you know, push DeMario Davis in. Let's bring David Harris out of coverage and put him into the run game. And it was only with those second half adjustments, they suddenly looked like a much better defense. And so I think if you get that first half Jets defense, I still think the Dolphins have a chance. But what about on the defensive side of the ball? Because I feel like I'm focusing on negatives.
Well, let's talk about other negatives.
1 sack through 3 games.
It's just, well, again, you know, there were certainly calls last year that Kevin Coyle's defense was too complex, too difficult. Not that our players were stupid, but essentially he was just calling too many different combinations of plays, almost plays, if you see what I mean. We played so many different fronts. We played so many different alignments in terms of coverages. Where players essentially don't know what they're doing. That was a massive problem last year. And Coyle, who incredibly managed to retain his job last year, mainly because Joe Philbin doesn't like firing anybody, look to the Mike Sherman situation. You know, and Coyle should have gone. Oh, well, I mean, Philbin should have gone, but Coyle should have gone at the end of last season. The meltdown towards the end of the season was just horrific. And he said, "Oh no, it's going to be fine. It's going to be fine. I'm going to simplify everything." Well, it clearly hasn't been simplified. And I think Rashad Jones certainly talked to one of the Dolphins newspaper boys last week and said that, you know, that they are playing so many different coverages against the Bills. They were sort of flipping from Cover 2 to Tampa 2 to Cover 3 to man to man, almost sort of within the same play, pretty much, and that that it just left everything so confusing.
It was the Will Gavin Madden 16 version of play calling.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it was perfectly highlighted with that, with the long throw to the Hall of Fame wide receiver, Chris 7-11 Hogan, who Jamal Taylor thought he was going to get safely up over the top. Well, Aikens, I don't know what he thought he would cover, he was in, but it certainly wasn't the coverage that was stopping a touchdown to the all-world receiver, Chris Hogan. It's just been, you know, a nightmare. Olivier Vernon, who I believe to be one of the most overrated players in the conference.
Great physical skills, but...
Absolutely, just not
never put it on the field.
He's getting the bounciest piggyback off Cameron Wake that you could ever imagine. Then Cameron Wake isn't, you know, Ryan Tannehill had more tackles than Cameron Wake this season. That is a fact.
Like, that's an incredible stat.
Isn't it? Mike has more tackles this season than Cameron Wake. There you go. Well, actually against the Jets. But they, you know, they essentially figured out that if you get stepping in coverage, then they're going to burn you. Koromisi had a pretty bad day in coverage. And Bryce McCain just, you know, when he walked out of the locker room, he should have just kept on walking and never come back, because that was one of the most horrific performances by a corner. And what was interesting was that Kevin Cole criticised McCain when asked why he was playing so far off old critical completion. So, you know, 3rd and 9, he'd play 9 yards off. They'd throw it, the receiver would have the momentum, McCain would be trying to, and he'd beat him first down, rather than being, you know, in man or, you know, press coverage. And Kevin Cole said, yeah, we certainly wished that he'd play closer. Why did you tell him to play closer? Is there a communication issue? Were the Patriots controlling their headsets again? Why wasn't somebody communicating to Bryce McCain after it happened the first time that they'd like him to play a little bit closer?
Could you just get a bit tighter on your man, mate? Thank you. Yeah, cheers.
Okay,
cheers.
Next play, that's fine. Or wait until the locker room and say, Bryce, mate, next week, play a bit closer. Didn't work out so well this week. But we didn't tell you, but we'll do it next. If you do it for next week, it'd be great. I mean, that just sort of defies belief. So I find myself in a situation as a Dolphins fan, obviously very excited that my team is coming over here on, kind of landing around about now, actually. But sort of thinking to myself, and I shouldn't really say this out loud, but if we lost, is it the worst thing in the world? Because...
Well, this is going to be my question. Let's just spitball this. You win, you then have a bye week, you then have Tennessee, who are very beatable, despite everyone wanting to put Marcus Mariota in the Hall of Fame already. And then you...
Wait, he's not in the Hall of Fame already?
He's the new Joe Montana, haven't you heard?
Oh, of course, yeah.
And then you get the Texans at home. Theoretically, after 4 weeks, you could suddenly be a 4-2 team and suddenly in a division which has struggled more than we expected it to, looking like you're in a good position. But if you lose this weekend, are we going to see some behind the scenes and potentially front office and coaching changes all coming in very quickly? You have a finger on the pulse.
It's a quandary. Well, I mean, there's been mixed reports out of Miami. The people that work on the beat believe that Stephen Ross is very frustrated, embarrassed again, which is not a good position to be in if you're the owner. But he really, really likes Joe Philbin. And, you know, with games against Tennessee and Houston coming up off the bye week, where you could make some, you know, changes, not personnel changes, but changes to systems and things, knowing that, okay, you might be 3-1, but if you beat Houston and Tennessee, you're back to 3-3, and you're kind of not back in the mix, but you're certainly setting yourself up for a decent sort of second half of the season. Or do you lose the game, and does the same thing happen that happened with the Raiders after they lost to Miami last year in London, in that Dennis Allen was fired? It would seem like the perfect opportunity to get rid of Joe Philbin, who, you know, has never had a winning season. I think has lost just a huge amount of games at home, especially when Dolphins are favourites. And really, the team has taken on his personality. I mean, personally, he should no longer be the head coach of the Miami Dolphins. The question obviously becomes who takes over, and that I think is the biggest problem, because you certainly don't have a long-term prospect to take over. There's not a Gus Malzahn or a David Shaw or a Brian Kelly, if you're going to go in the coaching route, that would you know, leave their jobs mid-season. And in terms of, you know, coordinators, you know, a Josh McDaniels, a Terrell Austin, these guys are not going to leave their, Ray Horton, these guys are not going to leave their jobs currently, because obviously it's the fourth week of the NFL season. So essentially you're either looking for a coach who's been out of the game for a while, and realistically, you know, John Gruden probably isn't going to leave the broadcasting booth. Bill Cowher's been out of the game too long. Tony Dungy's been out of the game too long. You know, you're kind of struggling to look at those kind of retreads. And then do you look at somebody on the coaching roster that you currently have? Well, if Fielding goes, Kevin Cole has to go. So you can rule him out straight away. Beyond that, it probably falls on the shoulders of Bill Lazor, who we've already talked about as being an inconsistent and frustrating play caller who hasn't particularly set Miami alight in the way that people thought that he might. And I certainly know that there are concerns within the organization. I know this from speaking to a couple of people within the Dolphins, that Lazor is quite an abrasive character, which actually, as a head coach, might be a good thing. But I think there are certain people within the Miami organization that aren't sure whether or not Bill Lazor is the future of the Miami Dolphins. And so, you know, there are all these questions sort of floating around, and, you know, you kind of think maybe I would take a defeat if it meant that we cleaned house and Philbin was out and Coyle was out and we could kind of concentrate on pushing hard for the rest of the season. But if that, you know, is that actually going to happen if we lose? Because Stephen Ross is not particularly somebody that is particularly going to wield the axe straight away.
Look, I'm hoping that after Sunday and at some point in the near future, you and I can have a much more positive conversation about this.
I think it will be the last two
have been very negative, but I'm pulling for you, buddy. I'm really hoping that this weekend that something's going to happen, and I can't wait to actually finally meet you face to face on Sunday morning.
Yeah, that'll be great.
So
I'm going into the locker room after the game, and if we do lose, I'm going to cause hell. That's not true. Cut a bit out. The NFL will ban me.
Start kicking people and just start throwing punches and
John Fielding, you fool.
He's old. Bless him. Brilliant. Well, I can't wait to see you Sunday, mate. I'm sure we'll hear more from you after this weekend. Good luck with it all. And let's not just be too downhearted. All right, buddy.
Cheers, pal.
The New York Jets arrived in London this morning after a bleary-eyed 6-hour, 15-minute flight from the States. A hired sleep specialist has helped them with that, and apparently they've brought 350 rolls of US toilet roll with them too, based on the fact it's thicker. I don't know either. There's plenty of media presence at their press conference with the usual glut of questions about UK-based franchises. The rather more peculiar issue of that US toilet roll. Nick Mangold saw no issues with our UK loo roll, by the way. Brandon Marshall's love for antiques and the big AFC East meeting with Miami at Wembley this Sunday. If the Jets are to win, they'll need to play lights out D once more. So we caught up with Quinton Coples, one of 8 first-rounders on the Jets, the fourth-year man talking to us about his role with head coach Todd Bowles, currently the league's best takeaway unit with 11 turnovers, and whether that sleep specialist actually worked. How are you feeling? Flight over? You refreshed?
Yeah, feel good. It was a long flight, but got some good sleep, some good food when we got here, so everything's going well.
We heard about this sleep specialist. Did he give you any tips on the flight?
Yeah, he came in, gave us a few tips, how to stay, you know, get as much sleep as you can, and how to stay energized and rejuvenated. So it's going to be fun. It's going to be interesting. So far, so good.
What about those orange shades? We all saw you wearing them. Did you have them on?
Yeah, I had some orange shades on. Those were supposed to be the, I guess, change the different lights. So
yeah.
Reflection of your eyes, and it kind of gets you to go where to sleep mode and downgraded mode, so that's fun.
We've heard about all the home comforts, the toilet roll coming over as well. That's been a big talk. Have you brought any home comforts over yourself from home?
No, not at all. I just came over to enjoy what I do, enjoy the experience, and embrace the moment.
Absolutely. And in terms of the start, 2-1, brilliant win over the Browns. Then you went to Indy, won there in Monday Night Football. A bit disappointing last week, but the D shut him out second half. How have you assessed it so far?
I think we did good, man. We realized our mistakes last week with Philly. We went in the next day on Monday and corrected them, and you know, this year we did what we had to do to prepare for Miami this week, and I think we pretty much all ready to go for Sunday.
It's obviously you've been here 4 years, it's your fourth year now. You had Rex Ryan for the first three. It's a new coach and a new staff now. How has it been under Tom?
It's been good, man. I think he really got the team where we want to be at, position-wise. And he's a great leader. He made some great moves in the offseason, him at the front office. So it's been good. It's been fun. He has made it, more of a strict fun type of deal. So it's exciting to see for him to be our leader, and it's exciting to see what turnout going to be for the rest of the year.
What's he like as a character? Because he seems very even, either win or lose. You get the same guy, don't you?
Yeah. You get the same guy. He don't really have too much personality, but he do have some personality. So it's kind of like whatever day it is at a week for him. That he's feeling, that's what you get. So it's pretty fun, but overall he's been a good guy. He jokes off the field, he's all business on the field, so you can't ask for something better than that.
Seems to me like he'd be really different from Rex, who obviously was upbeat, loud, in your face all the time kind of thing.
Yeah, I think Rex was more, that hands-on type of guy that's really, in the position meetings and all that type of stuff. So they both have their advantages and disadvantages. So it's a great deal.
Well, I guess for you to have a defensive-minded coach, Rex and Todd, it was great, isn't it?
Yeah. Rex was great. He was tremendous on defense, and Todd come in with the same type of mentality. So it's been fun being able to play for a defensive-minded coach.
Talk to me about defensive coordinator Casey Rogers, because obviously he worked with Miami. Has he got the inside track on their offense, giving you a few tips?
He gave us a few tips. Being that he been there with them for a few years, like you said, he picked up on some things. So it's going to be interesting to see how those things play out. But he definitely gave us some tips and hints to kind of give us the edge and see the win over there.
Talked about the defense before. 8 first-round picks. You lead the league at the minute with 11 takeaways. I can see you smiling. Yeah. It's all good so far, isn't it?
It's great, man. At the end of the day, we got a bunch of guys, a bunch of athletes.
All of them, man.
Like you said, first-round guys. These guys are... Constantly competing against each other to be the best that we can be. And so it's actually fun to be on this defense and to be able to, create turnovers and lead the league in turnovers.
What was it like for you when you saw Revis come back through the building, Cromartie, then you draft Leonard Williams as well, and you just think, we're just getting better?
Yeah. I mean, Revis has been a great guy. When I first came in, he was one of those guys that, reached out to me, let me know he was there for me. So I always had a lot of respect for him, and, Crow was another guy that came in and kind of did his thing and helped out every way that he could. And then drafting Leonard was a great pick for us. He's athletic. He's playing fast. He has a lot more to accomplish in the game that he's going to accomplish with time. But he's been tremendous so far.
I guess you're going into your fourth year now. You're kind of a little bit of a mentor to Leonard as he's coming through his rookie season. Is that right?
Yeah, that's safe to say. I try to help out as much as I can. If there's anything that I can do to help him have a easier career or better lifestyle off the field, then I'm definitely all for it. And showing the ropes and doing things and showing how he can be active in the community and around the city as well.
Let's talk about you going into your fourth year now. You suddenly got better each year. Do you feel like this is the year where you sort of really make that big breakthrough?
I think at the end of the day, my job is to make sure that I help this team win as many games as possible. The individual stats will come in due time. It's just about helping this team win and making sure that I can do my job and make sure I encourage guys to keep the momentum and intensity up while we are there on the field.
And Calvin Pace tipped you for double-digit sacks before the start of the year. It's 6.5 last year. Do you feel that's attainable this year?
Definitely. At the end of the day, I think, like I said, it'll come when it comes. Right now, I got to make sure that I do whatever it takes to help the team. And sometimes they don't always be the great guy individually stats, but I take it for what it is.
I was going to say, because you do a lot, don't you? It's not just pass rushing, you're good against the run, you drop into coverage. Do you like being a bit of everything?
I love it. But I like how coaches have us brought about athleticism. So it's been fun to be able to cover guys and to be able to go rush against guys and sack quarterbacks and stuff all in one. So it's been fun. So I'm excited about continuing to keep doing that.
And how hard was it coming out as a rookie? Because obviously you went from to the outside linebacker in a 4-3. We saw a few in your draft class. I guess it's hard, isn't it?
It's definitely a difficult position to play. It's not big for everybody, but I've had two. Coach Rex was a great coach. Coach Carl Dunbar, they kind of showed me how to, you know, manage that position. And then coming in on the tie, he did the same thing as well. He came in, kind of showed me the ropes on helping me be successful at that position.
And in terms of this Sunday, obviously AFC's rivalry, we haven't had one in London so far, rivalry game. For someone who's played in those games, what are they like?
It's great, man. That's the intensity is going to be there. It's good football. You know, we both try to take each other's heads off, but at the end of the day, it's all the beauty of trying to win the game. So this should be a fun event. It should be great for London, great for the fans over here, and just a great game overall.
Have you been to London before? What have you made of it so far?
This is my first time. It's a bit different. Everything is different. You drive on the other side of the highway, and people are different. People are a lot more open and friendly up north in New York or whatever. But it's been good. It's been very relaxing type. So I haven't really got out to see too much yet, but I should be able to after this. I think it's gonna be cool though. It's definitely a different experience, and I'm glad to be a part of it.
And this, just finally, this game before the bye, obviously if you win you go 3-1, and Miami go 1-3, it's a really big game in both teams' season, isn't it?
Definitely. You know, our job is to make sure that we win, so we want to make sure that we leave here with a W, and also a great experience. So you know, that's up for them to deal with their but our job is to make sure that we get out here and we do whatever it takes to win.
Brilliant. Thanks so much.
No doubt, man.
Cheers.
You.
Good luck on Sunday.
All right.
So big thanks again to the New York Jets and Quinton Coples, and now joining me on the line to talk about his team's chances at this weekend's first International Series game of the season is Gridiron's own Liam Blackburn. Liam, are you optimistic going into this weekend's game? Because I feel like you should be.
Yeah, but having been a Jets fan, it's easy to not be very optimistic. Pessimism is your first port of call, really. And I think this is a dangerous game, and it's kind of one that's got my hopes up with how bad the Dolphins have been over the first 3 weeks and how good the Jets have been. And that kind of makes it a dangerous one where I kind of expect to win. And as you find out last week, when you expect the Jets to do well, that's always when it comes crashing down.
If this game is going to be won and lost, well, let's say lost, because I think we know where this game could be won. The Dolphins' offensive line play was just dreadful against the Bills, and we'd love that Jets front seven. So if they could find a way to lose this game, how would the Jets go about losing it?
I guess it would come down to a sort of similar situation to the way they lost the game last week. You know, get behind early on. It's not a team that's built to come from behind. It hasn't been for many years. Eric Decker didn't practice again today, so there's a possibility that there could be an awful lot of onus on Brandon Marshall. And if they double cover him as the Eagles did last weekend, then, you know, you're left with people like Quincy Enunwa, Chris Owusu, Jeremy Curley, Devin Smith, the rookie. Jeff Cumberland's not going to play, Todd Bowles has said today, because he's got a concussion. So one of those guys is going to need to step up again. And, you know, Fitzpatrick threw 58 passes last week. And if you take away Marshall, it suddenly looks like a very, very ordinary offense that could struggle to move the ball. Chris Ivory as well was limited in practice today. He didn't play last week despite being padded up. And if they can't run the ball and they can't move the ball effectively through the air, it could be a real sort of turgid, low-scoring affair.
It's what we all love to see. Good defensive fronts, terrible running games. But Chris Ivory, I mean, he supposedly was ready to go for Sunday and they decided not to risk him. So you'd feel positive that he'll be back this weekend. And I think that's a big difference to the line play from both teams this last weekend. Certainly on the offensive side, wasn't great. And I felt like for the Jets, without Ivory there to get his yards after contact and to be that guy who can just bang it through the middle, that's just not being able to establish the run seemed to really kill the Jets that last in the weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Ivory's not sort of, you know, he's never going to create loads of highlights, and he's not going to go for 100 yards, two touchdowns every week, but he's just a punisher, isn't he? You know, he hits people and he'll break through a couple of tackles, and he really wears people down throughout the game. And they kind of have to respect the run as well and take away sort of men out of the box. As you say, he was suited up and ready to go last week, and you hope he'd be okay. But the real worry with a long flight with injuries like this is that, you know, things things seize up and tighten and, you know, maybe are made worse by the long flights. But fingers crossed he should be okay because, as you say, the offensive line play, they couldn't really get anything going with the run. Willie Colon's out with a knee injury, so Brian Winters is going to have to step up on the line as well.
Sorry, can you call him by his proper name, Willie Colon, please? Thank you.
Willie semicolon is going to be out with a knee injury. And Brian Winters is going to have to come in. So you sort of worry about, you know, how he'll fit into that offensive line as well. But fingers crossed they can get it done.
It's all pessimism. Come on, tell me why the Jets are going to win this weekend. And I have certainly picked the Jets in the gridiron-magazine.com Pick'em League.
As have I, actually. So that's another dangerous precedent. Possibly because the Dolphins have been so bad. But, I mean, you know, if I'm going to be optimistic, the defense has looked really good. They shut out the Eagles second half last week. I know they only got one takeaway last week, but they still lead the league with 11 over 3 weeks. Revis should play. I know, again, Todd Bowles has said today he's hopeful with a hamstring injury, but seems to me like he'll play. The secondary has looked ridiculously good, as good as advertised. Callum Price seems a lot more comfortable hitting people in the mouth rather than focusing on his coverage. Revis and Cromartie, as good a tandem as you're going to get. Buster Skrine's come in and one of the most underrated cornerbacks in the league, I think, certainly covering in the slot. And, you know, there's Tannehill's really going to struggle to move the ball on that secondary. And if the Jets do get ahead, then I can see that defense taking over. The front four have caused offensive lines problems. They might not have got the sack numbers, but they've moved offensive linemen back. They've disrupted pockets. You know, Wilkerson's playing as well as he has done. Leonard Williams is growing every week. Quinton Coples, who obviously we just mentioned, perhaps doesn't have the sack numbers, but is good at pressuring the quarterback. And then, you know, David Harris and Demario Davis have got that experience to cover in the linebacking core as well. And it's a very good defense that needs just a little bit of help from the offense to win games, as we saw against the Colts. And if that's where it's going to be won, then you'd like to think it's going to be done with turnover-free offense. Fitzpatrick can't throw free picks again, and good defensively.
All very exciting. See, it's all very positive. I think the Jets are going to win this weekend. You've got quite an exciting weekend in general, Liam. You're coming down on Friday, getting to go to Jets training. Are you like a kid in a candy store right now?
I am. I was massively disappointed they weren't over for the whole week, actually. I've put the whole week off work.
Stupid rugby.
Absolutely. And I've been expecting to, you know, camp outside the hotel with a flag. No, not really. I've been really excited about him coming over, say, the media day on the Friday, and then I think I'm going with Neil Reynolds on Saturday to do the fan rally and the big event in Trafalgar Square as well, so that should be quite exciting. And obviously, the game on Sunday and with the early kickoff is, we've got a veritable feast of football all day, haven't we?
Woohoo! Cannot wait. Look, mate, it's always an absolute pleasure chatting with you, and certainly I'm sure this weekend. Sherry has floated the idea of doing a podcast after the 6 o'clock games, because the 9 o'clock games we're not so excited about. But yeah, he's floated the idea of doing a podcast after the 6 o'clock games. I'm not so sure we're going to be in the best of states, but it does look like we're going to the Hippodrome. So that is right near the studio. We just don't want a repeat of last year's Willie Young incident, ideally.
You don't want to repeat. I definitely want to repeat of that incident.
I am desperate to not end up saying something on mic while drunk that will stick with me all the way through the Super Bowl and basically make up my entire week.
But the thing is, it's not live. You can easily edit it out, but you chose not to. You chose to put this up and open yourself up to ridicule.
You can't censor gold like that, Liam Blackburn. You've got to let the people see your true face, see your true colours, and appreciate you for who you are, and hopefully they're not going to roundly mock me when I continue to say stupid things for the rest of this season.
Can I make a request based on the last time we were in the studio and the shoddy hosting that you did?
Unbelievable!
I've seen the picture that Americanage put up of you with your biscuits and your drinks and the nice little setup they had there.
I brought the biscuits to Americanage.
So you're expecting us to bring...
I'm not saying I'm expecting that. I'm just saying I was a good guest and I brought biscuits with me and it was clearly appreciated.
Are there any left over?
Actually, there might be. I haven't been up to the studio yet, so maybe.
I look forward to eating them on Sunday then.
Some stale jammy dodgers, why not? Look, mate, I'm going to see you in 3 or 4 days' time, so looking forward to it, pal. Jets, 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 Jets. Because I'll lose some money if you don't win.
Cheers, thanks.
All right, big thanks to Liam Blackburn. Looking forward to the Jets side of the ball for this weekend's game, the Miami Dolphins against the New York Jets at Wembley. Can't wait. As we said beforehand, if you get on Twitter, at Gridiron, we'll tweet out where we're going to be for this weekend's games. And then afterwards, I think the plan is to go to the Hippodrome. We'll probably be there for about midway through the early games. We've got all sorts of locker room and post-game and all that sort of nonsense to do. So we'll get there about 7, 7.30. We'd love to see you there. Come up and if you spot two bearded ginger men, one shorter and slighter than the other, then that's probably us. Come find us, say hello, chat to us about the football. We'd love that. I'll probably be there for the duration, to be honest, because even though it's not my favourite slate of games this weekend, and to be fair, on the Gridiron-Magazine predictor game, I found this one of the weekends where I clicked through the picks quite quickly. There weren't a lot I dawdled on. I still think there are some great games in there. And what we're going to do now is quickly go through them all.
Okay, great.
Fantastic. The 3-0 Atlanta Falcons welcome the 1-2 Houston Texans. The Falcons featuring arguably the hottest quarterback wide receiver duo in the NFL right now. They're hoping they can complement it with a prolific rushing attack. Because if I asked you the question, Ollie Hunter, before the season, that on week 4 only 2 running backs in the league would have touched the ball 30 plus times in a single game, I wonder who you would have guessed.
Adrian Peterson and Marshawn Lynch, probably.
Yeah, maybe. And you maybe throw an Eagles running back in there, although they do like to spread the ball around. But they have so many offensive snaps, you know, all of that. But no, the answer is Alfred Blue and Devonta Freeman.
You're my boy, Blue!
Matt
Jones. We should get that as a drop, by the way.
Hopefully. They may have Arian Foster back this weekend for the Texans. So the Falcons could face quite a tough challenge if he comes in. Matt Ryan threw a pair of second half touchdowns to Julio Jones for a come behind win against Dallas, 39-28. We've got 3 big come behind wins for them. We've got the Texans coming in with a decent run defense, not necessarily getting to the quarterback enough at the moment. It's an intriguing matchup. I've taken the Falcons. Is there anything that you can convince me to go away from that?
I don't think so.
Good.
But right. The Texans won 2 of the 3 all-time meetings. However, they lost on their only trip to Atlanta in 2007. Alfred Blue is running well. He had a really great game last week. If Arian Foster comes back, expect to see him limited with Blue taking the majority of the work, I should probably think. DeAndre Hopkins, he's been the top target, 22 receptions, 252 yards. But that's not really saying much.
The fact is they've got Ryan Mallett under centre, so they're not a good football team.
I prefer Hoyer than Mallett. I liked Hoyer at the Browns before he got injured.
Honestly, I think it's like picking between going for a walk in some stinging nettles and pissing on an electric fence. Neither is enjoyable.
No.
One is probably slightly more enjoyable than the other, but it's a fine stretch to suggest which you'd enjoy more.
Yeah, it depends what kind of pain you're into.
Exactly. Let's move on then and talk about an NFC East versus AFC East matchup as the New York Giants, 2-1, 1-2. What are the Giants?
They're 1-2.
They're 1-2 after beating the Redskins last week. That is correct. Take on the Buffalo Bills at 2-1.
Indeed.
Fantastic. Two very efficient quarterbacks through the first 3 weeks. Two games which got running games going in last weekend's games, having struggled to do that beforehand. And two defences, one of which has been fantastic except in a single game. And the other one has surprised me in a big way. This was one of my tighter picks this weekend.
Really? Oh, easy for me. Home win all the way. However, the Giants have won the 3 of the last 4 meetings, including the last 2 in Buffalo. I really like Carlos Williams. I really like him. He's usurped.
He's going to be playing this weekend as well, isn't he? LeSean McCoy is confirmed out.
Yeah, LeSean McCoy's confirmed out. He pretty much usurped LeSean McCoy as the number one down back. More touches over the first 3, well, over the last 2 games at least anyway. And he's the first player to score a touchdown in the first 3 games in his first 3 NFL games since teammate Percy Harvin did it. In 2009 with Minnesota.
Nice, good stat.
Yeah, not too shabby, that.
The thing we need to be massively underrating, I talked about 2 efficient quarterbacks. Tyrod Taylor is 5th in quarterback ranking through his first 3 starts of his career. But Manning, No interceptions in 108 attempts. Only Tom Brady has thrown more passes without being picked off this season, and he's having a ridiculous year so far. Manning's looking after the ball, and their offense has been getting better and better by the game. And admittedly, whilst they're playing Washington last week, I like the way they're moving up, and I like that the line's starting to come together after they brought in some more pieces in the summer. But I do think the Bills' defensive scheming is going to be too much. They can run so many different concepts, do so many odd things, that I think they will trick the Giants into finally throwing their first interception of the season. And it's a home win for me as well.
Yeah, home win for me. I think the Bills' defense is fantastic. However, Victor Cruz, they thought he would come back. He's out, so expect a lot more action, a lot more work for Reuben Randall.
Chiefs at Bengals. The Bengals have risen to the top of the North, and I've already crowned them AFC North champions with three unbeaten games. The Chiefs have drifted to the bottom of the West, heading into what looks like a critical week for contest on the road at the Paul Brown Stadium. Cincinnati joined New England and Denver atop of the AFC with 3-0 records, a mark that yielded 75% chance of the postseason since 1990. And that is officially our overused stat of the week. Not officially that stat, but people telling us what percentage you are likely to go to the playoffs based on your start through 3 weeks. I don't care. The Bengals will go 4-0 for the first time since 2005. Should they win this game, the Red Rifle is on form. AJ Green looking sexy. And in fact, let's bang in a little bit of... As someone correctly pointed out, we should have said Al J. Green when we played this the other day. They look really good, and I like them to win at home. And the Chiefs, who just haven't got any kind of vertical offense, even though they've added Jeremy Maclin, are going to keep struggling. And I liked the Chiefs for the season. That's falling away quite quickly.
Bengals have won the last three in this series, and the Chiefs have lost all four trips to Cincinnati since last winning there in 1984. The Chiefs have given up 861 yards and an NFL high 10 touchdowns. They're terrible. That defense, which should be good, is not. And with that injury,
I still love that front seven.
Is great, but the injury to Grimes brought in Branch, who's normally a safety, had to cover Randall Cobb in the slot. When you've got AJ Green. Or Al J. Green. Marvin Jones.
And Tyler Eifert playing out the slot, who's having a great season so far.
And Andy Dalton, who's throwing brilliantly. Yeah, I've gone the Bengals in on Gridiron-Magazine Predictor Game.
Nice. Well plugged, sir. Eagles quarterback Sam Bradford has gotten off to a rocky start in Philadelphia. And Kirk Cousins will want to... make more of his latest opportunity, which he's not been doing so far. Two struggling signal callers taking on each other at FedEx Field this Sunday night. A Philadelphia 1-2 dropped its first two games, with Bradford committing 5 turnovers and throwing just 2 touchdowns. But they improved against the Jets last weekend. In the first half, they got the ball running well. They had Ryan Matthews. DeMarco Murray will be back this weekend, and there'll be some kind of split of the carries, we believe. They've only had 2 plays over 25 yards so far this season, but I think that's down to the style of the Chip Kelly offense and the fact they've lost Jeremy Maclin as well. And I just think that Washington are not a team that are as good as their first couple of games made them look. Better in the run defense than we thought they were, but their secondary was absolutely torn apart by Eli Manning, of all people, last week. Their offense is terrible. They turn the ball over too often. I've gone for the Eagles here.
Yeah, this one actually I found really difficult to pick, because Washington at home, they can turn it on. Matt Jones does look good, but he's turned the ball over a couple of times. Freddie Morris, who we thought of after the first week, that would be the return of Freddie Morris. It hasn't quite happened for him. On that, 2 plays of just 25 yards or more, tied for last in the league, Chip Kelly has said, it's a combination of everything. We've had some drops, but there's been some times where guys are open and we didn't put it in on them at the appropriate time. Jordan Matthews leads the Eagles, 22 catches, 231 receiving yards. But the next 4 guys on that list are all running backs. Darren Sproles, DeMarco Murray, Ryan Matthews, and then tight end Zach Ertz. They need to get other wide receivers in the game. Nelson Aguilar does not look like the player we saw in preseason. Actually, bollocks to that. Preseason's rubbish.
Philadelphia, 8th against the run this year. They looked particularly good against the Jets last weekend, but the Jets were missing Chris Ivory, so that's not saying a huge amount. You're not sure they've gone up against a rushing attack as good as Washington's is on paper. So, in theory, Washington could get that run game going, but who have you gone for?
I've gone Eagles, but watch out Jordan Reed. He's having a bit of a good year so far.
Nice.
Tight end for the Washington Football Club.
Okay. An all NFC South affair. The Carolina Panthers, who before the season we said thanks to their terrible offensive line were going to be a bad football team, they're currently 3-0 for the first time since winning its first five back in 2003 and making a lone Super Bowl appearance. Cam Newton, for many people, and there was a fantastic article on Gridiron Hive magazine this week talking how where Simon Clancy claimed that this man was his MVP of the season through the first 3 weeks, has been fantastic with that terrible receiving core around him. Old man Olsen got going last weekend and looked good. Jameis Winston looks exactly the player we thought he was. He's decent in the pocket. He can move, but he's throwing too many risky passes and he's getting picked off. And I think that an opportunistic Panthers defense, as they've proved so far, will get a road win here.
The Bucks have a 10-game losing home streak. How bad is that? I can see only a Panthers win for this. Winston's completion percentage dips to just over 40 on third down, and all three of those his interceptions so far coming on that. So pressure wise, he's not standing up. They've only had one out of 12 on third down last week. I'm worried for Winston. I'm not sure that he's the player that people think he should be, or he would be, or he actually is. Cam Newton's been fantastic, a joy to watch. Love his movement, love everything that he's been doing. He's what he's doing as a quarterback. He's making others around him, that terrible receiving core, look better than they are.
We'll give just a tiny bit of love to Tampa Bay and say there is a little bit of hope for you. Luke McCown did manage to throw for 330 yards against this Panthers secondary last week. So the secondary, not as strong as their front seven. They only gave up 70 yards on the ground. So if they revert to going through the air, those big receivers in Jackson and in Mike Wallace, then they... Not Mike Wallace.
Mike Evans.
Yeah, Mike Evans. Mike Wallace is a terrible player. Then I think that could mean something. And we don't know if Luke Kuechly didn't practice yesterday. He could still be missing. So, Bucks, there is some possible upside here. I just think that you're going to lose at home again. Oh, the best.
Same.
The best game, undoubtedly, of the 6 o'clock kickoffs is where we're going to see Oakland, who haven't had a winning season or been to the playoffs since 2002.
Nice.
The longest run outside of Buffalo. Could go three... Will go 3-1 as they travel to the Chicago Bears.
What do you make of the Bears shipping all of their talent?
I think a lot of it, and we kind of didn't get to cover this on the last show because we recorded it, and literally 10 minutes after we finished, they traded away Jared Allen. About half an hour later, they got rid of John Bostic.
That's why I'm asking you now.
Yeah, thanks, buddy. I'm just making sure that people realise why we're covering news that's a couple of days old. Jared Allen, terrible scheme fit with Vic Fangio, as we said he was going to be when Fangio first went there. When we talked about the Bears having these big coaching changes, it was on the old show, admittedly, 4 or 5 months ago. We talked about how the defensive pieces there did not fit the 3-4 system. It was going to be a real transitional year for them. We actually singled out Jared Allen at that point, and they decided now that it was time to get rid. It's silly that they didn't do it, say, before his roster bonus came into place and maybe try and get rid of him then, either cut him or trade him away. I mean, they got a sixth round pick out of him, but they paid him $11.5 million. You wouldn't pay $11.5 million just for a sixth round pick. So I think I understand their reasoning. I just think if you've stuck with him, why not try and use him as a situational pass rusher until the end of the year? Bostic, for all his big hits, John Boom Bostic, and all his impressive splashy plays, is terrible in coverage. And again, doesn't really fit the system because they require at least one of their middle linebackers to drop back into coverage. So they're both good drops in terms of scheme fit. I just think, wow, the Bears are throwing the baby out with the bathwater already.
Yeah. Sucking for whoever rhymes with uck. I think I used that last time as well.
I think you did, and I laughed both times, yeah. So it's fine.
Matt Forte, He's the only saving grace for this terrible, terrible Bears team.
But I actually quite like the defensive front of the Raiders. We said it this year. They've got a team which looks like a real football
team. Khalil Mack.
Khalil Mack's fantastic. Done really well since moving to end. It took him a couple of games to get going, but was really impressive last weekend.
And you know what we didn't mention from last weekend? Charles Woodson's interception to seal the game off. Fantastic from old man Woodson.
Old man Woodson, unbelievable. 38 seconds remaining. Snapped an 11-game road skid and expect them to go back-to-back road wins this week. Derek Carr, only 100-yard game last season, threw two already this year. Both of them, I mean, to a single receiver, obviously. Mm-hmm. Throwing over 100 yards in a game, that would be ludicrous. To a single receiver, and that's been Amari Cooper. He looks fantastic. I think Latavius Murray has potential to run up here against the bad Bears run defense. Yeah, I like the Raiders to win on the road. 2 weeks in a row. Go 3-1.
Wow.
That gives you a chance to go 3-13 for the season, guys.
Incredible. Cooper, 15 receptions, 243 yards in the last two games. I really like the look of Latavius Murray. I really, really like the look of him. It looks great when running, when he breaks those tackles and he's in open field. Brilliant.
Let's get into the later evening games then. I believe it's a late evening game. It's been played in San Diego, so it must be. The Cleveland... you're just showing me... Oh, I've missed a game off! I've missed a game off! Terrible. How have I done this?
I could tell you how, because it's between two terrible teams. Ooh. Who somehow are 1-2. Ooh. Both of them. Jaguars at the Colts. Jacksonville have allowed the most points in franchise history last week.
Look, I can
in that actually... 51-17 loss to New England last Sunday.
And then Andrew Luck mired in one of the worst three-game stretches of his career. Just really, really bad. Doesn't seem likely the star quarterback. Well, he's at home, he's against the Jaguars, who admittedly, defensively, we keep saying that they're improving, they look good through the first 2 weeks, and then they got a 50-burger put on them by Tom Brady. If there's a week that Luck can get back on track, after a great fourth quarter against Tennessee in that 35-33 win, it's probably at home to the Jags. I've taken the Colts in this one, but I just think it's going one of two ways. They're going to either scrap their way to it, but Andrew Luck won't throw multiple interceptions, which will be an upside, or they'll finally come together and just ruin them. But either way, I think the Colts win in a tight game, or they blow them out. I don't think the Jags win in a tight game.
No. The Jags have a few injuries to their safety and cornerback core. Jonathan Cyprian looks like that he won't be suiting up this weekend, and a few others as well. When it comes to the Colts, Luck has been sacked 5 times and taken 21 hits this season. Only San Diego's Philip Rivers has been hit more. That's something that the Colts really have to iron out.
I mean, well, in which case, there is some hope for the Jaguars. Yeah. They are decent defensive front. Obviously, we've mentioned it many times, but Dante Fowler getting injured was a shame for them. But they were sixth in sacks last year, and they're a team who can get to the quarterback. So maybe there's some hope, guys.
Okay, well, Gavin, you can move on now.
Let's just say Andrew Luck has been terrible under pressure this year.
He has been.
That's the last thing I was going to say.
Well, I mean, that was a given. I tried to cut you off before saying something that everybody knows.
Browns are going to the San Diego Chargers. The most exciting thing from this game from the Browns is that apparently there's locker room dissension over the fact they're going to keep starting Josh McCown over Johnny Manziel. Coach Mike Pettin claimed the fans' allegiances lie. Well, he claimed his allegiances lie with Josh McCown, even though he heard the fans calling for Manziel. When you're losing at home to the Raiders, it's no surprise to hear them calling for the young, exciting quarterback. He suffered that concussion in the first game against the Jets. Manziel came on through ridiculous touchdown passes to Benjamin for 2 consecutive weeks. And that's going to be the talking point for them. From the Chargers' side of the ball, Rivers, in the game against Minnesota, probably had his worst game I've seen him have in a while. 2 turnovers, left the game in the fourth. He'd been playing behind a damaged offensive line with DJ Fluker dealing with a badly sprained ankle. Chris Hairston dealing with an ankle injury of his own. I think that was a blip on their radar, and they can't not win at home to the Browns.
They can't. However, they have 8 turnovers, which is tied for second most in the league, giving them up. They only have 1 sack, which is tied for the fewest. But 402 yards per game on offense is fourth in total. So
here's going to be my prediction, my bold prediction for today's game. Melvin Gordon, 100 yards and a score. this is going to be his breakout game. He's had, in the weeks that he's looked good the last 2 weeks, and silly penalties and bad offensive line play, has called back a couple of big runs, he's had holding calls against them, he's looked like he's on that verge. I think this week, even though the Browns have a reasonably stout front seven, he's going to go out, go over 100 yards with a score.
I think we've pretty much agreed on everything. I'm going Chargers as well on this.
This is disgusting. Let's find a game that we're not going to agree on. Packers, no, that's not good. We're both going to agree on that one, trust me. Vikings at Broncos. Guess what? If you put the ball in Adrian Peterson's hands and you don't allow Teddy Bridgewater to throw it so many times, even though he's not a bad game manager...
Oh, come on.
Then they are a team.
Don't give me that. Bridgewater's rubbish.
Then the Vikings... No, he's...
No, you're on the... You talk about Bridgewater like you did about Bortles, and what's been proved about Bortles?
Hey.
Not good enough, mate.
I'm still on the Bortles bandwagon.
Teddy will prove to everyone that he's not an NFL quarterback.
This is going to be the toughest test for him, though. The Broncos' defense, the best in the league up until this point. I don't know whether just that's based on the eye test. I can't tell you based on rankings because I don't have the information in front of me. 7:30 in the morning. Get off my back, guys.
Yeah.
But overall, as long as they let Manning do what he does instead of trying to force him into an offense he doesn't like, I think they can finally get the run game going this weekend. We saw Minnesota on the road against the 49ers in week one look bad. This is another West Coast-ish game for them. They've been much improved the following 2 weeks. This is the week that it's going to fall apart for them. I think the Broncos win, and I think we see a Broncos running back go over 100 yards today. I'm going back-to-back bowl predictions. I don't know which of them it's going to be.
Neither of them.
Combined for 100 yards?
I have no faith in either Hillman, Thompson, or Anderson. None of them. I don't like any of them. I can only see a defensive game and the Broncos come out on top.
Ugly and low scoring. That's what we like to see from our televised... Is that the televised game? I think this might be the televised game, actually.
This one is the televised game, you're right.
An all-NFC West clash as the 1-2 Rams go to the 3-0 Cardinals, a team that everyone wants to send to the Super Bowl. Everyone says they've been brilliant. Carson Palmer, he's 16-2 in his last 18 games, but he's played so far this year the Chicago Bears, the New Orleans Saints... and the San Francisco 49ers. And if, come next May, we're here with the number one overall pick, the Chicago Bears, with the number two overall pick, the New Orleans Saints, and with the number three overall pick, the San Francisco 49ers, I wouldn't be all that shocked. So can they beat a good defense in the Rams?
Yes.
I mean, yes, but I'm just trying to give some excitement to that
game. Oh, right.
Come on.
Yeah, yes. look, the Cardinals' offense is superb, and their defense is coming up with plays, albeit against the terrible Colin Kaepernick. They've won the last three over St. Louis, and in the first two of those games, have scored 30 points with Carson Palmer under center.
Carson Palmer has been ludicrous this year so far. 803 yards, 9 touchdowns, just 2 interceptions. Sacked just once in that last game. Carson Palmer is playing like the pre Raiders trade Carson Palmer before all the injuries came in. Their offense, Palmer and the offense are responsible for 13 of Arizona's 17 touchdowns because they've also got a pretty good defense at taking the ball away from you.
And you know what it is? Because he was injured last year, it's almost like how the Patriots are annoyed at the NFL. Carson Palmer's annoyed at the fact that he was injured when he was probably in the prime of his career. He is now in the prime of his career, and it's great to see. It's great to see how well he's getting the whole offense humming. Chris Johnson looks like a bona fide running back once again. Who would have thought it? I'm going Cardinals in this. I'm really looking forward to seeing this game, especially with seeing how the offensive line of the Cardinals stacks up, matches up, and copes with that wonderful front 5, 6, 7 of the Rams. Great game. I'm really looking forward to this. Really pumped for it.
Exciting stuff. Now let's move on.
You're looking forward to this one?
There's no more 9 o'clock games to talk about.
There definitely is.
It's going to be Sunday night football at this point. Yeah?
Nope.
Okay. In week 3, Aaron Rodgers was given a negative grade by Pro Football Focus.
I'm sorry, actually. It still makes me laugh every time I hear it. I mean, geniuses.
He decimated what is considered to be a well-respected defense entering the season. The next team up have allowed 90 points and nearly 900 yards of total offense through their last two games. That is as the Green Bay Packers travel to the San Francisco 49ers. Now, this game has a particularly special place in my heart because I first met Ollie Hunter in April of 2012. In that time, the Green Bay Packers have played the San Francisco 49ers four times. The San Francisco 49ers have won all four of them. QPR and Reading have faced off against each other nine times. Reading have won five and drawn four. Ollie's teams have never beaten my team.
That's true. I've never tasted victory.
Come Monday morning, that will have changed. Look, I've taken the Packers.
It could have changed.
It will have changed.
I know why you've taken the Packers. Because you're a closet Packer fan.
I love watching Aaron Rodgers. Who doesn't love watching Aaron Rodgers? I refuse to make the comparison with the 90s basketball star that everyone keeps making. But the man is ludicrous. What he does before the snap, what he does... like, if you heard my review of the Monday Night Football on Tuesday morning when we put our podcast out this week...
I didn't hear it.
There are not enough hyperbolic words I can use for this man. He is playing quarterback like almost no other player to ever play the position. As I said, both on Twitter and on the podcast, he is a robo-quarterback sent from the future to make everyone else playing the position look stupid. And to all those people who said to me, Tom Brady's looking pretty good. There are three tiers of quarterbacks. There is Aaron Rodgers, there's Tom Brady, and then there's the rest of you who all look like human beings and messes and just ridiculous. Aaron Rodgers is going to pull apart the 49ers. The only way that they don't put a 50 burger on San Francisco this weekend is if they choose to let their foot off the gas.
And I didn't get to mention it, but the way when they let their foot off the gas is when they put Clay Matthews back in where he should have been, where he used to play and should be playing. The way he's running that defense, him and bollocks.
We get it. You've got a quarterback on both sides of the ball. Whatever, mate.
Yeah, man.
Do you want to talk about your team anymore?
I just love them. 49ers. No, I don't. Don't want to talk about those. The only thing is the rush defense kind of went back to a little bit where it was. 90 yards to Jamal Charles off 26 carries. If Carlos Hyde can get something going, then perhaps there's a glimmer of hope for the 49ers. But
that's all right, because since realizing after week one having a surprising game, and I think springing a surprise on the Vikings, having to travel west, late game, all of that nonsense, since then, what's basically happened is that we've realized that playing Eric Pierce at right tackle when your starting right tackle has been lost, and playing some guy inside at left guard who the Patriots fans all thought was a joke when they even traded into you, let alone you starting them, means that you can't get a run game going. We've not got a very good line. We've not got a very good quarterback. We've not got a very good receiving core. Well, no, we've got a good receiving core, but it's going to be bad. It's going to be bad.
Yep, Packers for me.
Cowboys at the Saints. Brandon Whedon to get his first win in his starting run?
Nope. Well, I can't remember what I've put on Gridiron.
This is a game that actually, I think that the Cowboys, the Saints defense have been terrible this year so far. New Orleans dropped to 0-3 last week after suffering a 27-22 loss at Carolina. They're still most likely to be having Luke McCown under center. There's a slim chance Drew Brees comes back as he resumed throwing at practice this week. But if he's back in the game, it's no guarantee he's going to play well. He came out in the 26-19 loss to Tampa Bay. There's the little part of me that's like, back in the dome. They've been so terrible at home. They've got to turn that around at some point. The Cowboys collapsed in the second half once the defense started to play well against the run. But they've got a Rob Ryan defense they're going up against with their great offensive line. Brandon Whedon's going to have about 15 seconds to throw every pass.
Yeah, that's true. Was it against the Saints that we saw that stat of Tony Romo last year where he had about 8-9 seconds to throw?
Yeah, per throw, yeah.
Incredible. The Cowboys have lost 8 of their last 10 against the Saints. However, the very last meeting in Dallas last year, the Cowboys won. So, look, I've gone the Saints. I don't really know why. almost like a Ravens kind of thing. They can't get any worse. So and with Brandon Whedon going to the dome, it's just something inside me thinks that the Saints will pull this round. Randall's looking fantastic, but they've finally managed to get the ball to Ingram on the Saints side of the ball. So I've gone Saints.
Well, I've taken the Cowboys, so finally we've disagreed on something. Yay! Woo! I don't think we're going to be disagreeing on the next one. The Seattle Seahawks finally looked like the Seattle Seahawks, admittedly against the Chicago Bears, but the rediscovery of Jimmy Graham and the return of Cam Chancellor helped the Seattle Seahawks put aside an 0-2 start. Guess what happened on offense last week? They were terrible in the first half, and in the second half, they put Jimmy Graham in the slot, where he was so good for the Saints. So they're trying to line him up outside, put him on the line. They played him basically as a big-bodied slot receiver, and suddenly he became really good, and they went on to a 26-0 victory. I'm still slightly concerned about their run game. I don't think Marshawn Lynch is going to suddenly get going in this one against a pretty stout Lions run defense.
Yeah, but Thomas Rawls...
With Nata in the middle.
Thomas Rawls look good, 100 yards.
Oh, do we know if Lynch is going to be back?
It's touch and go. I don't think they'll risk him, especially after he aggravated something last week against the Bears.
I feel like he's going to be back, but not taking the full bulk of the snaps.
I think like
you've
the
got to force a team like the Lions to prepare for a player like that. I think
like the second half against the Bears, where Thomas Rawls came in and looked pretty good actually, albeit against the Bears. I predict that will happen again. It wasn't Jimmy Graham lining up as a receiver what most people thought would happen.
And yeah, oh, absolutely.
Pete Carroll being Pete Carroll.
He was just targeted twice in week two against the Packers, making one catch for 11 yards. That was bizarre. It seemed odd. The Detroit Lions at 0-3 had its own struggles defensively, allowing nearly 28 points a game, 396 yards a game. They haven't started 0-4 since 2010, but considering Philip Rivers managed to throw 403 yards on them in week one, Peyton Manning, as an old man, threw 325 against them last week, and they allowed Peterson of Minnesota to rush for 200 yards. The Lions defense should be better than it is. It's not. The Seahawks win this one.
And the Lions offense should be better than it is, and they're not.
What I think I've learned from this weekend, I looked at these games and I wasn't too impressed with them. What I think I've since worked out is actually I like the slate of games overall. I just don't particularly like the primetime games this weekend. Maybe I'm going to get an early night after drinking too much after the Wembley game.
That will happen. Rams, I like Rams Cardinals. I do. But then I am the most positive person on the planet.
That is true. That is true. So that's our look at the week four games and particularly the Wembley game. Just a reminder again, at Gridiron on Twitter, we'll tweet out where we're going to watch the games early. We have had a tweet in from Robert_Cop asks best place for pre/post Wembley drinks, pre-game Green Man Pub. Google it. We've all got our smartphones. Come on, man. That's a fantastic place to go. Get there nice and early. Get a seat. They've got a big garden there. They'll be doing a barbecue.
There'll be loads of people there as well.
Loads of people. They have a tent with merch in, and it's very reasonably priced merch.
I need a new beanie.
Well, there you go. That's the place to go if you need a new beanie. He also asked, how many hot dogs do you think you can eat at once? Proper ones, not from a tin. Now, I don't know if he literally means at once, because I think the circumference of my mouth is probably only going to fit in a maximum of 3 hot dogs.
Yeah, I agree.
Is it just the sausage? Because probably I could get 5 or 6 in then.
But if you're talking kind of hot dogs that professional eaters eat, which are kind of like that air bread and they sort of stuff them down.
In one sitting?
I don't know. What's a hot dog? Like, oh, you're a gross man. I don't know, maybe 4, 5?
4! I reckon I could eat 15.
Yeah, I'm not
maybe more. Maybe more.
Are you adding onions and mustard and stuff?
Oh, no, you've just got to get it down your gullet, mate.
By the way, I think Coast to Coast, where we went before, there's good food there. Actually.
Coast to Coast be very good
right
before the game.
Right next to Wembley, so. Yeah,
that's a great shout. Coast to Coast before the game. Again, Google it. It's in the shopping centre right next to Wembley. Tom Hassel asks us, where's the best place to get a pre-game burrito in London? Now, are you going into Central, Tom? Because if you're going into Central, the answer is
Tortilla.
Yes, Tortilla, just off Trafalgar Square, opposite Charing Cross Station. It gives you the best meat ratio. It gives you the most overall. They have great chips there. They've got very reasonably priced beer as well. Yeah. If you want drinks, the Benito's Hat does some great cocktails.
I've not been to Benito's Hat.
Oh, Benito's Hat is great. 2-for-1 cocktails as well in the evenings, but I don't know if they
cocktails.
Do that on the Sunday. So that's good for
for
the margaritas
cocktail?
And stuff. Long Island iced tea. I know it's a bit generic, but it's a good one.
Mine's a White Russian.
I went through a little White Russian period when I was younger, but I think I was just Russian. I just thought I was cool because I'd watched The Big Lebowski. So yeah, that's the simple answer to that. I'm just seeing if we've got any. We did put this tweet out at 4 a.m. So I don't know at 4 a.m. at 6 a.m. So I don't know if we're going to have had too many responses. Oh, that's quite a nice question. Adam Foxcroft says to us, unless you're the New England Cheatriots and deserves it, week four is an unfair week to have a bye. Discuss. Somebody's got to have it. I think you could probably start the byes in week five after the first Wembley game and just give those same teams the bye in week five. But the scheduling in the NFL is mental. It's so difficult to comprehend. I understand how you get scheduled and how your schedule is put together, but to pick which teams play where, when, consider the two city teams, consider cities that can't have things on certain weekends, consider certain cities can't have certain kickoff times. It's mental. So
listen, if you have a bye early, and then you have to go through the wild card, that means you're playing more football towards the end of the season when you might be a little bit more gassed. If you have a bye later, that could be more beneficial if you do make the playoffs. So, swings and roundabouts, pal.
Pal!
I don't know why I got aggressive then.
Dave Cheeseman asks, what's the best NFL stadium, MetLife, AT&T or Lucas Oil? I haven't been to any of those three.
Me either.
I feel like I should have been to every NFL stadium on the way I talk about it, but I haven't yet. We're going to be doing the tour next year, though, with Sports Travel Tours. Go to sportstraveltours.com. We'll have more to announce about that very soon, including how you can get involved on the tour, where the games are going to be, etc. I imagine we're going to go through the South. Maybe Indianapolis will be involved. Maybe Texas will be involved. From people I know that have been to those stadiums, AT&T is the one that people would select. Lucas Oil has a fantastic atmosphere, from what I understand, but not so much recently, because they've not been very good recently. And MetLife, well, the only people I know that have been to MetLife went there when it was very, very, very cold. Quick shout out to Chris Harrison, who says, it's Friday! Gridiron Magazine is here, and we know what that means. It's NFL Wembley weekend! Need to take a deep breath, I'm so excited! We're all in agreement with you, my friend.
Yep. Surely am.
And finally, and I just really liked this question in general, Simon Day asks, all 32 starting quarterbacks are injured for the season, which is, we're heading in that direction, let's be honest. Who wins the Super Bowl? I go for Kansas City or the Eagles. Okay backups and a decent defense. Ollie, your thoughts?
Who've Kansas City got?
I'm not so sure I'd suggest that Chase Daniel is an okay backup. I think there are better backup quarterbacks in the league than that. Any thoughts from your end?
I don't know enough backups to say. I really don't. But if you've got Sanchez as your backup, and he did pretty well when he came in last year, I
think you've got to have an argument with the Eagles. They've got a reasonable defense. Not great secondary so far this year, but their secondary is their weakness on defense, and they're going to be having backup quarterbacks though against them, so that's a positive. And they've got the bizarre offense that they shift around, and they could do interesting things with. That's a potentially interesting one. I mean, Whedon didn't look bad last week, and Dez Bryant will be coming back. My answer is Brock Osweiler and the Denver Broncos.
My answer is Garoppolo and the Patriots.
So we're saying the AFC are definitely going to win it, and that would be, yeah, that would be my one. I just think the Denver defense is phenomenal. I think they've got enough offensive weapons to keep going with Brock Osweiler under center. The Bills is a consideration for me as well, just because we love everything else they've got there. But EJ Manuel's their backup now. They've got rid of Matt Cassel, so maybe I'm being ridiculous.
Yeah, I think you are being ridiculous.
Let us know what you think at Gridiron on Twitter. If every quarterback in the league went down, who wins the Super Bowl? Anything else you'd like to add, Ollie, on this already very long podcast?
Nope, gotta go.
Excellent. You go have some sleep. Enjoy Dolphins training, which we've already going to have heard your report from. So that's going to be very confusing to the listeners. We're just 2 days away from Wembley, so come and find us. We'll be maybe at the Green Man Pub beforehand. We'll be definitely at the Hippodrome afterwards, as far as we're aware. At Gridiron on Twitter to check us out. Get your picks in, gridiron-magazine.com. It's the predictor game on there. Check out sportstraveltours.com. And as I say, the information of our tour will be coming up very, very soon. I've already asked you any final thoughts, so I have nothing else to say. I've been building up, and I don't know where my end point is. Yes, I do. Wembley on Sunday. Jets, Dolphins. I can't wait. I'm so excited! There you go. I'm hoping that you're sat in your stat dungeon in your pants. Is that correct?
I'm certainly in my pants, and this is the place where most stats are, so yes.